Bet the board.
What do you mean you don't bet?
I mean, I don't bet. You know, I don't care. I don't. I never have, and I never will.
Yeah, right.
I'll bet you $20 I can get you gambling before the end of the day.
You owe me $15,000, pal.
Pay him. Pay that man his money.
It's the Bet the Board podcast.
God likes me. He really, really likes me.
In the end, I wound up right back where I started. I could still pick winners, and I could still make money for all kinds of people back home. And why mess up a good thing?
Here's Payne Insider and Todd Furman.
Welcome into the Bet the Board podcast, powered by betonline.ag, talking all things NFL Week 14. Monday Night Football update still to come, a little contest update on the Bet the Board 5K football free roll, interview with Dave Mason, the big game breakdown from the American Sports Betting Coalition on the Saints and Falcons tonight. But before we get to all that, I have to introduce my co-host. I am, of course, Todd Furman, joined as always by the man who carries the show, provides the entertainment value, and offers the investment advice, Payne Insider.
Week 14. I got a little more juice in me today.
Yeah, sounds like you got a little more pep in your step than you've had for the last couple weeks.
Getting ran ragged with three podcasts a week.
I was going to say, it's amazing. You know, you take that Wednesday podcast for college football off the books, you bring a little bit more energy. I wasn't sure if it was a change in a diet, a juice cleanse, you know, if you're watching some other shows in the wee hours of the morning. I wasn't sure what's changed the dynamic and the demeanor so far.
Well, you know, when we do these podcasts Monday, Wednesday, Thursday, you get Tuesday off, but it's not really an off day, right? You maybe get the morning, but then you're doing prep work and it's...
It's a film day. I mean, you're in team meetings. It's a film day. You're going through walkthroughs.
Busy. So, here we are. Good games this week, though, finally in the NFL.
Yeah, definitely. And a little bit of an abbreviated schedule as far as games we'll be doing deep dives on, but all major playoff implications. First things first, though, I want to thank all of our loyal listeners, Payne. I mean, I know we talked about them favoriting, retweeting, going on to iTunes, writing up positive reviews. The outpouring of support was absolutely tremendous. So from the bottom of our hearts, we want to thank everybody. As we said, we do these podcasts for you guys and really appreciate you guys reciprocating. So for all those folks that did that, thank you going above and beyond. And as a result, just kind of carry into crowning yet another weekly winner. And I believe you have that gentleman's fine credentials in front of you.
Yes. Again, thanks for all the reviews. Keep those coming on iTunes. 5 stars. Give a little review. Todd and I will go through those throughout the next couple weeks and pick out a few good ones. So much obliged there. Week 14. No, I'm sorry. Week 13, right?
This is the week 14 winner. That was going to be pretty impressive.
Week 13 contest winner. And I'm going to butcher his name. I believe it's Nick McCall. Nick M-A-K-H-O-U-L. What do you got for me there? You're the smart guy of this tandem.
I mean, that sounds about right. I'm not going to claim that I can phonetically pronounce people's last names if they're rather unorthodox, and I don't want to diminish his achievement, as we know how competitive it has been to take home that weekly prize, let alone the season-long standing board, which we'll come back and recap with only 3 weeks to go going next week. So, Nick, congratulations.
Yeah.
The Bet the Board administration will get in touch with you if you haven't already. And get your prize pack out to you. Encourage everybody. A few short weeks left. Still some individual prizes. Even if you missed a week during the regular season, you can win that Bet the Board gear, little Visa gift card, little other swag in there to prominently show how proud you are of being a loyal Bet the Board listener.
And he's killing it right now. Went 5-0 this week, obviously. Guessed the exact score of Steelers-Bengals Monday night, and it came down to that tiebreaker. And thank God, Nick is just crushing. He's got 44 points. On the season. And it was a tight one. There was another guy with 42 points. So he's got a shot at winning the whole damn thing.
Is he the leader in the clubhouse right now?
He's not. 47, I believe, is the leader in the clubhouse.
47. 47. So. And I can't even do the math. What is that? 47 and 18 off the top of my head through 65 games?
You could be on to something.
Something along those lines. I mean, it's incredible, the results. But obviously, I don't want to dwell on that. I do want to laud people for their accomplishments and thank everybody that's participated, especially those folks that come back week in, week out, regardless of their record. But Payne, we have some other work to do, and that is, of course, covering the actual football games that will be taking place this weekend. And let's start with an afternoon game. We'll go rotation order in Northern Florida, where it's the Seattle Seahawks fresh off of their pasting of the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday Night Football, taking their show on the road to take on Jacksonville, where it's the Jags, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 40. Payne, we know how good the Seahawks have been during the month of December under Russell Wilson's leadership, 20-5 straight up. So a little unusual to see them installed as underdogs, especially against the team on the come in the form of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
I'm not sure which team is real here. I think we're going to find that out, obviously. And the biggest thing for me is we're seeing improvements in little areas from each team. And we'll find out which one of those improvements these teams are going to be able to keep with them moving forward. And we touched on this a little bit Monday. Seattle's ground game looks like they're improving a little bit. Jacksonville's run defense is improving. So this is the big thing to watch for me, this matchup here. And it's Dwayne Brown getting acclimated to a new system. Luke Jokel back at left guard. He's returning to where he's played some football. So he's got this one circled. Justin Britt, we talked about him. We like him at center. He can truly play that position now. He's not helping out everywhere. So with those three guys back, we saw Sunday Night Football. Seahawks averaged 4.3 yards per rush attempt against the Eagles defense. And we know how great that front seven is for the Eagles, number one in adjusted line yards. So is Seattle going to be able to run the ball? They're going to have to in this spot because I don't think Russell Wilson can consistently beat Jacksonville's defense through the air, right? You can't have a one-dimensional attack against Jacksonville because they have a great pass rush, number one in adjusted sack rate. They have a fantastic secondary. We know about that. So Seattle here is going to need a ground game without question.
When you look at this game and try and figure out, I know Russell Wilson, very deserving of some of the consideration he's currently getting for NFL MVP because without him, the Seahawks team really would have absolutely no identity on the offensive side of the ball. But you dig into some of the passing numbers that they've shown, and against teams that I wouldn't say have elite secondaries, obviously, by any stretch of the imagination. Last four games, 228 yards passing or less against the likes of the Eagles, the 49ers, the Falcons, and the Cardinals. If Seattle isn't able to get on track, and I'm not sure what getting on track against the defense as good as Jacksonville means, is it 3 yards per carry? Is it 3.2 yards per carry? To at least show a little bit of balance to keep this Jacksonville defense that leads the league in sacks from pinning their ears back and coming after Russ to try and flush him out?
Yeah, that's the only way. You got to get out early, and that's been the MO of how you beat Jacksonville. Get out early, establish the ground game, force Bortles to play catch-up. That's the biggest thing here. And if they're able to run the ball, they're going to have some success here, and that's the other thing here. Talking about this Jacksonville rushing defense. First 8 weeks of the season, before their bye, they allowed 5 yards per rush attempt. That was worse in the NFL. Jacksonville, during that eight-game stretch, think about this. 56% of runs were grading successful. Again, dead last in the NFL. And then they made that big acquisition. They bring in Marcell Dareus. I think he came in during the bye week. His first game was against Cincinnati. And we've been monitoring that situation since he arrived. 12 snaps in the opening game against Cincinnati. But over that five-game stretch, Jacksonville has improved to 14th in rushing success rate defense, just 42% of runs grading successful. So prior to Dareus, 56% of runs. With Dareus, 42%. And the league average is 44%. So you can see that drastic difference here. Like I said, that's going to be the biggest matchup in this game.
And I think, you know, you look at the modern NFL, I don't think you have to have an elite-level run defense. As long as you can keep them a little bit behind the down and distance and set up third and intermediate, you know, 5 and 6 with a secondary as good as Jacksonville, it puts you in a situation that you're going to be able to win on a lot of those key downs. I do want to ask you, Payne, about a couple of different things regarding the Jaguars. We know this team has struggled as far as an against the spread perspective. Their last 18 games at home, they're only 6-12 against the number. And when Jacksonville was struggling to win 2 or 3 games, we talked about home field advantage, odds makers building that in, but professional bettors thinking that there is no adjustment required. With Jacksonville now playing much better football, we know about the heat that you can see and the humidity in northern Florida this time of year. Are we talking about giving them a normalized home field advantage that we give to a lot of the other good teams and playoff-bound sides in the National Football League right now?
We've been ahead of this curve a little bit. And a lot of folks were saying at the beginning of the season, no home field advantage, maybe 1 point. And then I got a couple buddies that were at the game for when the Rams showed up. And they said the turnout was fantastic. and there's not a lot to do in Jacksonville. There's going to be a lot of people there for this game. We're not giving it the full three. Probably not even giving it 2.5. I think we're looking at 2 in this game. A lot of it to do with the flex time as well. At 1 o'clock, I would have preferred Jacksonville and maybe give them maybe a half a point better for home field advantage. But the 4:25 game start time that got flexed makes this a little bit more interesting. So that's what we've done with home field advantage there for Jacksonville.
One last thing before we close the book on this particular game. We've seen this number. BetOnline.ag opens Jacksonville 3.5-point favorite. That number immediately disappeared from the market. There was minimal resistance at 3. As we mentioned, 2.5, and actually starting to see some Jacksonville money come trickling in, you know, as we speak. Does this number get back to 3, or is there just too much public support and public sentiment on the Seahawks that keeps this number under a field goal as we get towards that Sunday late afternoon kick?
We could get to soft 3 if there's a large enough position from professional bettors. I mean, that's the reality of the situation. We know the public has their say for sure. But we also know it takes just a few bets from respected folks to move a number like this. And what I have seen on Seattle is certainly public money, but the public is not taking a game from 3.5 to 2.5. So there was one group on Seattle earlier in the week. We'll see if that is their official position. Even if they don't have a say in this game, you can earn taking 3.5 and laying 2.5. So we'll see what comes of this in terms of the market. But I would think there's potential here. If there is a group or two that is interested in Jacksonville, to get this back to at least soft 3.
You may even have a favorable money line in this game from talking to some of the books, at least locally here, in terms of the way this is skewing. You know, the general public gravitating towards the Seahawks money line. And while you're not going to get a Super Bowl-type scenario, you may be able to save a nickel or dime. And if you're grabbing 3.5 with a chance to lay $1.35, maybe even $1.40, it's going to put you in a long-term advantageous position, no doubt about it. We head to Arrowhead in an AFC West showdown. I don't want to call it quite an elimination game with a pair of 6-6 teams, but teams more or less trending in different directions. But as the Kansas City Chiefs, a 4-point favorite at betonline.ag, total in this game 48, paying trending towards 48.5. Oh, how the mighty have fallen as Kansas City. We chronicled on Monday some of their struggles. And now Andy Reid comes out and suspends what I think arguably is their best defensive player in Marcus Peters.
Over money seems to be real at this point, despite it being an elimination game. That we know. Where we want to go with this game, you know, I'm not quite sure. Obviously, the Marcus Peters suspension is huge. To me, it signals that Andy Reid is safe with his job title to make a decision like that. This wasn't mandated from the league. This was Andy Reid coming down with this decision. Peters is has a huge impact on this game. He's their best cover corner. He's probably one of their better defenders. He's having a solid season. When you look at the snap count, there's not a cornerback in this league that's played more snaps. He's got 847 snaps this season. Only 4 corners that have even eclipsed 800. So there's going to be an adjustment defensively. Obviously, it's a good time to implement Darrell Revis, who's newly acquired in this. For this team?
Oh, you know, I think you're right, though. I think he is newly required as well as acquired. So you were spot on there.
So, I mean, his workload's going to increase here. Last week, he played 40% of snaps. He's going to have a full role here against Oakland this week. And I don't know what he is. He looked okay last week in a small sample. There's a lot of mileage on those tires, but you'd think he sat out. For this little stretch run, this contract, for people that don't know, has been sitting on Darrell Revis' desk for months. He's been trying to work something out with Kansas City. He should be fine here, I would think.
When you look at this, and you are much better at this than I am in terms of reading between the tea leaves, trying to infer the underlying meaning of obviously articles, injuries, etc., and statements being made, what's your takeaway from Andy Reid electing to suspend his top defensive player for a marquee showdown when you have revenge against a divisional foe, knowing a loss here and you're probably behind the eight ball as far as your playoff hopes are concerned?
Oh, it sends a message. Let's see if it's received and how it's received.
That's what I wanted to ask. I mean, do you think the locker room responds? I mean, I think it's interesting that it happens for the Oakland game because we saw what happened with Marshawn Lynch and Peters the first time these two teams met. Marshawn gets bounced out of there, the close relationship there. I think there's some interesting dynamics in play when you look at the choosing this particular opponent, knowing the situation might be warranted when you chuck an official's flag about 60 rows into the stands. But it's going to be interesting.
Supposedly that wasn't the reasoning. The reasoning was, and maybe Peters was so shocked that he wasn't tossed from the game.
Heading to the locker room when he wasn't actually ejected from the game.
And that was it. Leaving the sideline when he wasn't ejected from the game. Maybe he thought he was. Maybe he was too much in the moment. I have no idea. But yeah, and he wasn't allowed to practice this week. He hasn't practiced. So it's not just the game suspension. He has not been at practice. He's been suspended from that as well. No nonsense week for the Kansas City Chiefs. I mean, this is their season. And I know we don't want to paint it that way because they will have opportunities, but how many games in a row can you drop? If you do drop this game, now Oakland's got the tiebreaker on you. They've won both matchups. You're effectively two games behind at that point. This is a must-win game.
What do you make of Oakland at this point, Payne? I mean, last week they were depleted at receiver. The Giants get the cover with a late field goal, losing that game 24-17. But a game Oakland largely had in control for the most part. Michael Crabtree back from suspension. Amari Cooper should be back by all accounts. I know he's dealing with an ankle injury now after
clearing
concussion. That's what they said after clearing concussion protocol. So
I saw that he cleared that, which was shocking to some.
Yeah, a little bit of bizarre circumstances surrounding all this. So if those guys are – I mean, Crabtree will be out there, are unavailable. What do you make of the Raiders and how they need to go about attacking this game? Not only from a point spread perspective, he'd be a live underdog here, you know, catching 3+, but to maybe go into Arrowhead, a house of horrors for them, and try and win this game outright.
One thing that I have seen with the Raiders this year, and I've watched a lot of their football, it's extremely inconsistent on offense. You know, you faced Geno Smith last week. I get there wasn't a need to push for points, but the Giants' defense – is banged up as well. And you go into that game, you score a touchdown 90 seconds in on 3 plays. You cross the goal line twice the final 4 minutes of the game. So there was a stretch for like 53 minutes where it was just nothing but punts for the Raiders. It's just been extremely inconsistent efforts there. And I was digging into this a little bit, and it is a short sample size, but Carr has not been good at Arrowhead. 3 starts in his career. He's got 40 total offensive possessions there. Just 3 touchdowns total. 2 of them came in junk time. Completing 50% of his passes there. He's got a 62 passer rating, just 4.1 yards per pass attempt in Arrowhead. It's a tough, tough place to play. Maybe if he gets both these targets back, he's certainly getting Crabtree back. That'll help things. That's really his favorite target here. But when you want to attack KC, we know it's on the ground. And then again, without Peters, maybe it's a little bit through the air. I would think you'd want a ball controlled effort here. I really do. I think you want to protect your defense, number one, and then you want to really take advantage of what transpired last week, and that was the Chiefs' defense being on the field for 43 minutes and 91 offensive snaps against the Jets. I think they could fatigue here. I think they could wear out. You know, this number at 3.5 is perfect. That's exactly what my power number makes it. So it comes down to what you're adjusting for these injuries, how you see the matchup, information you're kind of getting. Within, I can't sell the Chiefs here. For me, I would be leaning Chiefs. I like what I saw offensively, right? I like that Andy Reid was willing to turn over play calling duties. You mentioned this on Monday, 10.3 yards per play on offense with Matt Nagy calling the plays. One thing you will want to monitor here for the Chiefs is their center. Mitch Morse has not practiced yet this week. You're going to want to monitor that. But the biggest thing to get this offense going is you got to figure out how to get Hunt back involved, I think. And for me, this total says there's going to be a points aplenty here. And Kansas City is going to have to figure out how to score some points this week. That's been the biggest thing. They got out fast last week. I don't know what to make of Hunt. I really don't at this point.
I mean, I know before the season you weren't bullish and were a little bit surprised with how quickly he burst onto the scene. So regression. You know, I trust your analysis and evaluation of a lot of these players more than most.
Right.
And
look at this, by the way.
So he's kind of regressed a little bit.
Yeah, I got sent this note this morning, and this, I mean, I'm not, it's kind of what I pay people to do here, but this is awesome.
It's a good thing your people are doing what they're supposed to do and you're paying them for that. Because apparently, this day and age, when you read some of these articles on millennials, that doesn't happen all that often.
So, since the calendar hit October 9th, Kareem Hunt is averaging 4.3 yards per touch the last seven games. Touch. So, that includes passes. First five games of the season, Hunt averaged 6.9 yards per touch. And so, you know, we've talked about this. We don't want to be like cliche and say he hit the rookie wall, but it looks like that's the case. And it's gotten even worse the last month, right? So Kareem Hunt, the last four games, averaging 3.9 yards per touch. And then you start to look at the defenses he's faced in those four games. Jets, Buffalo, Giants, Cowboys without Sean Lee. Not a single of those four defenses are better than 17th in defensive efficiency. So Kareem Hunt has hit a freaking wall. They got to figure out how to get him implemented here. And the biggest thing, like, over-target Kelce in this spot. Like, this is a spot where Kelce has to have 12, 15 targets in this game. Oakland cannot cover a tight end. And I know the organization is in love with Navarro Bowman. And if you've done reading, they're talking about a long-term contract extension. Just target Kelce here. Oakland's faced 84 passing targets this season to the tight end. 68% of them have been completed. So this has to be a Kelce game.
You have to imagine you get your playmakers involved. You mentioned these total and the way it's going. These two teams, bottom of the barrel in defensive efficiency, Oakland dead last, number 32, Kansas City at number 28, according to Football Outsiders. One thing to keep in mind, Kansas City has had dominance against the division, 13-2 straight up against AFC West foes the last 15, 10-5 against the spread during that span. So we'll see if the Chiefs can get this train back on the tracks. Vikings at Panthers. Minnesota, a chance to continue to strengthen their resume and get ever so close to home field advantage throughout the playoffs. We know the Super Bowl will take place in the Twin Cities in early February as well. Minnesota, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total in this game paying 41. We've seen this number open at pick, even Carolina -1 in some spots. We've chronicled the Vikings' dominance from an against the spread standpoint. I mean, it's been absolutely incredible. 32-13 now over the last 45, 19-8. The last 27, they've been installed as a favorite. Seven straight times the Purple People Eaters have gone out there to play football. Seven straight times they've been able to collect the cash for their backers. Are you on board with this move first and foremost, the way the market has responded to Minnesota of late?
Yeah, I mean, it's a good football team. We mentioned this a few weeks ago when we gave out the Vikings. I believe they're at home against the Rams, and how we would potentially look back and think what a discounted price that was. And it's more so the professionals gravitating towards Minnesota, you know, not the public. And I get that, right? You look at Minnesota, it's defense first, Case Keenum, you got Thielen, like, you know, special teams guy, you got two backup running backs. So there's not a lot of pizzazz here that recreational bettors can gravitate towards. But professional bettors love Minnesota. And then there's talk within that locker room that, hey, every single game matters, because if we get home field advantage throughout, we could be hosting the Super Bowl at home.
I mean, it's just crazy to think about that this could possibly be the scenario unfolding. We know how tough and out that they've been. We know how good they are defensively. And I think all of us, it's funny, because you see the name on the jersey, we've seen Case Keenum in other situations. We keep waiting for that Case Keenum career-defining type of game, but he appears when I watch, and I don't evaluate talent, I don't pick up a lot of the same things, but he's simplifying the game. He's taking what the defenses are giving him, whether it's checking it down to his receivers, not trying to force balls into one receiver. He's got a complement of weapons in Stephon Diggs, Thielen, who you mentioned, Kyle Rudolph, etc., that he's able to spread things around. And I think they're much more difficult to scheme for defensively than anybody wants to give them credit for right now.
Yeah, without question. And I think, you know, that's the biggest thing. When you look at this matchup, and, you know, we've talked about Carolina a lot this year. And for me, you know, I can't figure out what they are. That's my biggest issue with this game, right? You look at the record, 8-4. Prior to the Saints game, they had that resurgence, winning four straight games. But you start to look at the competition of late, Bears, Dolphins, Jets, Buccaneers, teams like that. And during that stretch for Carolina, they've been an average football team. They've actually been outgained by 0.1 yards per play. So when I try to figure out what Carolina has to offer Minnesota, we know, and we've talked about this, Carolina plays that quarter's defense. And so just the long-winded way to get back to Case Keenum here is it's a lot of Carolina allows you to play football in front of them. And Case Keenum is going to take that, right? The corners play off. The Vikings have no issues taking what you give them. Number one in passing success rate offense. 53% of passes, great successful. We know Case Keenum at this point has been deadly accurate, right? Fifth in completion percentage. Monday, we talked about this a little bit, and it was baffling to me because I said, hey, they only scored 14 points on Atlanta. When I look at this, or Case Keenum, 25 of 26 on passes, 19 yards and in, how did they only score 14? But for this game, this matchup with that Carolina defense that likes to play everything in front, quarters, I think Minnesota's going to have some success moving the ball, right? They're not going to turn it over. They haven't really this year. 5 yards is fine in a pass for Case Keenum. That seems to be what they like to do. So it's a weird matchup here that I think benefits Minnesota a little bit. But in terms of this market, I don't know. It's tough for me to gauge. This feels like a spot where we were just traditionally looking at it. We're like, man, when does Minnesota run out of gas at some point, right? They have to, you would think.
Yeah, I mean, it's inevitable. They continue to play at a high level. We finally saw Philadelphia run into a wall last weekend in a hostile environment against Seattle. I just look at Carolina, and I probably spent more time than I should have watching that game against the Saints. You watch New Orleans kind of find ways early on in the game to do what they wanted to, and then more or less shut it down in the second half. And Carolina really wasn't equipped to play from behind. They didn't look like they had a lot of that big play potential. We've well chronicled some of the issues that in terms of difference makers that they have in the receiving game at this point. That passing game is nothing to be scared of. And if you're the Vikings, I'm putting eight men in the box and going, you know what, Carolina? I'm going to isolate all my defensive backs and play one-on-one coverage. Go ahead and show me you can beat me with the deep ball. I don't think Carolina can do that in the passing game.
It's the record is not indicative of what Carolina is.
They're an average football team. And you talked about it before the season. You said this schedule set up extremely favorably for Carolina to have a big season, to be poised for 10 wins. But when they step up in class, I've seen enough from them that I don't think that they are even close to being on the same level of the likes of the Saints, of the Rams, of the Eagles, of the Vikings, when we talk about the NFC pecking order.
It's all on Cam this week. You know, Carolina struggled to run the ball all season. You know, offensive line, 27th in adjusted line yards. And then you look at kind of who they have, and it's Jonathan Stewart. He's 31 in March. He's dealing right now with an ankle and foot injury. McCaffrey, not really a between-the-tackles runner, and I'm putting that nicely. He's nursing a shoulder injury right now. It required him to wear a harness last week against the Saints. Cam's dealing with a shoulder injury and a thumb issue. There's a lot of injuries that's partly also why this line has moved, right? Defensively, you got Charles Johnson, who's got the four-game suspension. Shaq Thompson left last week with a foot injury, was seen in a walking boot, says he's going to play this week, but he's clearly not going to be 100%. So a lot of this is a lot of these nagging injuries, and that's one thing where if you're a professional better, hey, they might not be out for this game, but if you can get a good injury report, says, hey, you know, Cam's at 80%, McCaffrey's at 75%, Jonathan Stewart's at 60%, and you have this, you know, culmination of all these guys dealing with significant injuries that aren't going to be 100%, they're going to take advantage of that.
Yeah, it changes the dynamics a little bit. Should be an interesting game to see. I have to imagine you are going to see some buyback if you get to a solid three out there in the market. There'll be some value takers on the Carolina Panthers. Another game that's going to go a long way in determining the NFC pecking order, Philadelphia, second straight game on the West Coast to take on the Los Angeles Rams at the Coliseum. Right now, you're looking at the Rams, a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 48. Payne, we talked about it on Monday, a 5-point swing roughly as far as the look-ahead number is concerned. Obviously not across or through a key number, just going through the zero. Before we get into the actual hand, actually, you know what? I can wrap this into the handicap. Do want to say that our thoughts are with anybody in the Southern California area affected by a lot of these fires. You know, we've seen the footage that gets out there. I mean, it looks damn near apocalyptic in terms of folks driving on the 405. We know the winds can be treacherous. When we take that to the football standpoint, the Rams had to change their practice schedule this week. Interrupted, they just went through a modified walkthrough on Wednesday. Football players are creatures of habit. How should we be factoring that in to some of our handicapping as we look to try and identify which of these teams will rise to the occasion and put themselves in good standing as far as getting one of those coveted buys in the NFC?
It certainly has to be incorporated in your handicap this week. You got not only the movement of practices, you got players, families, friends that are dealing with this. And any minute where their mind isn't on football and it's somewhere else, that's not a positive thing. By the way, not to make too much of this. It's unbelievable. And I'm going way off. Bitcoin won't stop.
I just
it's at 17.4.
I look at it, I keep a tracker up, I hit refresh, and I watch it go from 17.7 to 19.3.
Is it really that high, 19.3?
It did get to 19.3. There's been a little bit of correction. I can't wait when we get Dave Mason on in a few minutes to hear about him. I'll be surprised if we can even get him on the line to do, you know, his normal weekly contribution this week.
You have a tracker up that said it got to 19.3.
That's what I saw. Right now, as I look at a Coinbase app right here, I mean, shameless plug, maybe they want to come on here and sponsor us for the amount of time we spent talking about crypto these days. 18.9 as we sit here and record at 8:30 in the morning.
Jesus
Pacific.
Christ. It's 15,000 this morning.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking in the last hour, they're showing an incremental gain of roughly 2,000 a coin.
Wowzers. All right. I digress.
Back on track.
Yes, that should impact this game a little bit. It will have to be incorporated in your handicap, how much it's worth. You know, I don't know. We haven't gone player by player to see who's been impacted by this directly. But you have friends and family members that are certainly impacted by this, and it'll play a role.
When we look at Philadelphia on the other side, spending the time out west, you know, allowing their body clocks, the potentially good things that can come from team bonding when you spend this much time together. I want to talk about an injury. We're not sure of his status, obviously, as we record right now. Zach Ertz, do you think he's going to be available and ready to go? And if he's not, how much does that change what Philadelphia wants to do from an offensive philosophy standpoint?
I mean, he's going through the concussion protocol. He's cleared the first few stages of that. Today is a big day, obviously. We're recording first thing in the morning, so they haven't practiced where they're staying out in the West Coast. I think they're at Angels Stadium this week. So that's something you're certainly going to have to monitor. And when you talk about pass-catching tight ends, he's graded out top three this season so far in that regard. You look at what they kind of like to run in Philadelphia, a lot of it's over the middle. It's a lot of RPO stuff in the pass game, which is quick passing. Carson Wentz's eyes gravitate towards the middle of the field, and that's usually where Ertz is. And he's missed now. He missed a little bit of last week. He missed one game prior. So he's missed about a game and a half this season. And despite that, Ertz has 10 catches more than the next Eagles receiver. So he is clearly Wentz's favorite target. He's his blankie over the middle of the field. And so it'd be a significant loss. But that's something you're going to want to monitor. I had heard things are going somewhat well so far through the process. Today's a big day, though, where he'll get out and practice and has to basically, they'll see that the practice went well for him. And this is the big day for him to push towards getting cleared.
And you never want to diminish the importance of one game in terms of where it stands for these two teams, both with three other games remaining thereafter. You look at the Eagles, at the Giants, Raiders, Cowboys. They'll be favored in their next trio of games. So if they're able to win here, I don't want to say that they're going to run the table, but pretty good odds. Meanwhile, you look at the Rams, regardless of what happens Sunday, they go to Seattle, they go to Tennessee, and they have a home game against the 49ers. So little to say, at least on the surface for me, Payne, I think this game much more important to the Rams in terms of their overall body of work than it is to the Eagles.
Yeah, I couldn't argue that. It looks like, I mean, at this point, the Eagles are fighting for home field advantage throughout with Minnesota, but they've got the division wrapped up. There's no doubt about that. And nice little trip out to the West Coast the last 2 weeks, getting away from some potentially cold weather. I don't know what the Rams are, and this is the problem I'm having with this team. Certainly improved. And we know last week Arizona went in there, handled business. Cardinals are no world beater, but they've stepped up in competition the prior 2 weeks to that against the Vikings and the Saints. And when you talk about what they're doing the last 3 weeks, the Rams offensively and in net yards per play, they're a negative 0.6. I don't know what they are. I love McVay. He is awesome. Goff has certainly improved. He's no world beater. And without Robert Woods, the key here is you got to get Gurley established, whether it's on the ground in the passing game. When Gurley goes off, Goff is actually, he's been a top-tier quarterback when he gets something out of Gurley. in games where Gurley shut out, the Rams lose. It's pretty simple there. And when you start to break this game down a little bit, that's where the Philadelphia Eagles are fantastic, right? That front seven. If Gurley isn't going, it's going to put a lot on Goff's shoulders here.
Two questions on this game. We close up shop. One about this actual game, and then one something a little bit bigger in terms of the overall picture. Are you surprised at all with some of what the early betting trends suggest here? We've seen the market move towards the Rams, but by all indications and a lot of the folks we talk to, public sentiment is backing the Eagles right now, albeit a lower volume type scenario, but still at about a 65% clip. I have to think that that's going to gravitate more towards a 50-50 split as we get near kickoff.
It's stunning to me, the bet splits right now as we record Thursday morning, right? You know, Philadelphia goes out, they lose on national TV. The scoreboard isn't close despite, you know, Philadelphia outgaining Seattle by over a half yard per play. And you get the Rams 2 weeks in a row. They beat the Saints. Last week, the scoreboard looks like they crushed the Arizona Cardinals. We know that wasn't the case. So it does stun me a little bit where this market's going. We'll see if the bet splits even out. Last week, it looked like the Rams were a little susceptible on the ground, stopping the run. They have been a lot this year, but man, we thought we saw improvements once, you know, Donald came back. Oof. Last 3 weeks, they're allowing 46% of runs to great successful. That's 20th in the NFL. And now that Ajayi's got going, and he's been able to get worked into the system a little bit more. That bye week was critical for him getting his head in the playbook. Philly's averaging 5.3 yards per rush attempt the last 3 weeks with Ajayi fully acclimated. That's going to be the matchup that determines this game. I really believe that. I know this is a passing league now, but if Philly gets that run going and the Rams can't get that run going to protect Goff, it's just, I don't know, the bet splits are throwing me off here. Because all signs point, right? If we were just looking at this, the spot, the situation, potentially being able to get three, feels like Philadelphia would be the angle.
Yeah, it's the only way to look.
Yeah. But there's clearly professional money on the Rams at this juncture, and I don't love them. I just don't love the Rams. I'm not ready to buy in quite yet.
All right, one last thing. I think we've you know, basically spent as much time as we should on this game. You're starting a franchise tomorrow. You have a choice of one of these two sophomore quarterbacks. Are you taking Carson Wentz or are you taking Jared Goff?
Ooh.
I'm putting you on the spot. It's time to step up. The draft clock's ticking here.
Yeah. Do I have McVay coming with Goff?
No. You're building an organization from scratch, and you're starting with the quarterback.
Okay. Well, you have to take Wentz. If I get McVay with Goff, it becomes a little different.
No, I didn't. This wasn't a package deal. We're not playing NBA Jam.
So then it's Wentz. Yeah.
Okay, that's all right.
Yeah,
that's
it's got to be
check.
Wentz.
I wanted an answer there, and I appreciate you being a willing soldier to kind of go into that. All right, so into Sunday Night Football, Heinz Field, and AFC North showdown. I know we didn't talk about some of the implications from Bengals Ravens at the top of the show, but we had so much to try and get to today. So my apologies there. Pittsburgh, a 5-point favorite, paying at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 43.5. You look at the Steelers, Ryan Shazier, the unfortunate circumstances there. Obviously, health, the primary concern. We can talk about his football impact and how his absence will be felt. Juju Smith-Schuster serving a one-game suspension for a crackback block and subsequent taunting.
What bullshit is that?
You look at the Ravens, they, of course, lose Jimmy Smith to a torn Achilles and a four-game PED suspension. Which of those injuries, in your opinion, do you think has a potentially bigger impact on this matchup Sunday night?
Has to be Shazier. I mean, he's their quarterback on defense. He's their play caller. He is fantastic in pass coverage in 2017. That's what you need. You need a linebacker that can free flow sideline to sideline, cover running backs in space, cover tight ends. It's a massive loss. South Florida kid, just turned 26, know of him pretty well. Great kid. Everyone loves him. And not to get too far off into a tangent here, I watch all these games. I watch, go back, rewatch them, watch the film. We're hopeful everything turns around there for him. I am actually stunned it hasn't happened sooner. He continually tackles with the crown of his head. It is like tackling no-no. Mistake number one. I am, you know, I'm stunned it hasn't happened beforehand. I mean, it's just how he tackles. But he is a massive loss. And when you can, you know, add Joe Hayden that we know is also out this week, that's part of this handicap, right? So, you know, professional bettors at this point are on Baltimore. That's not difficult to tell. Bet splits are fairly even, although slightly coming in on the public. But when you deal with a short week and how physical that Bengals game was, that might be the most physical game that I've ever watched. And now you're dealing with no Shazier. And mentally, these Pittsburgh players have had that on their mind in this short week. It's a tough task for them. The number is without a question short, right? We made this game 7.5. I'm not in love with Baltimore in general. Love the defense. Certainly, you know, they're making this playoff push. But when you look at Baltimore offensively, averaging 3.9 adjusted yards per play on offense, that's dead last. So when you look at the metrics, this number is extremely short. At 4.5, I'm not running to bet Baltimore at this point. At 6, 6.5, potentially buying to 7. It's a different story, but just pure power number. This line's short, and certainly you have to factor in all those situations we alluded to, the injuries, right? It's not just Shazier. Juju's down with the suspension, horrible decision by the league there. You still have Antonio Brown dealing with the toe. He went out there, warmed up on Monday Night Football, looked horrible. They shot him up. He was fine. Now what does it look like on a short week? Was there ramifications of playing on that toe that wasn't 100%? This is a weird matchup from this perspective, Todd, because we talk about this all the time. How does Baltimore want to play? They want to play physical football.
Yeah, they want to try and beat you up. They want to play smash-mouth football. They want to run the ball, open up play action, and try and bully you at the point of contact. When I look at it, Payne, I mean, I don't think that's something you can do against the Steelers. Now, Monday night does play a role in it, but right. I mean, are they going to be able to go out there and pick up 4 to 5 yards of carry, hit you right in the teeth like they were able to do last week and against the Lions? I think absolutely not.
They're going to try. That's their calling card. Always has been under Harbaugh. It will be until he's gone. And again, when you're Pittsburgh on that short week, you exerted a ton of energy playing catch-up on Monday night. You crawl from, were they down 17 at one point? And again, this is the most physical football game that I think I've ever seen. And then you worry about the Shazier effect, right? Mentally being exhausted dealing with that. You have players talking about it in every single presser this week, every single interview. Still a couple days ago, you see, I think yesterday, I was watching a bunch of these interviews from the players in the locker room, and it's just like somber, head down. So Baltimore's going to have to establish the ground game. They have to be the more physical team. I think that's where you have to attack, right? And Joe Flacco certainly performs better when he's got a balanced offense, when he's got help in the running game. Every quarterback is, but certainly Joe Flacco. Last week when they got the, I always forget his name, he's from Miami too, Collins, the Irish dancer, whatever his name is, when they got him going last week, that's when the offense started to really emerge. Joe Flacco looked like a competent passer, dealt with a few drop balls early in that game. Macklin, a huge drop ball to convert a third down that would have pushed them into scoring range. But Joe Flacco, 56% of his passes last week, graded successful against the Lions. With Joe Hayden out, maybe Baltimore throws a little bit more here. But I think you have to try to be physical. You have to really try to figure out if that short week, that Monday night game against the Bengals is going to show up twice here. And then the big question is, and I hate to even propose this because we don't ever want to get into stupid handicapping, but I know this is like... Wait,
I'm always glad, before you get into it, you preface a statement that you're going to make, and that's the kind of lead-in for it. So I'm not sure like if I need to make, I need to be sitting down for it. You know, I need to straighten out my tie. As we said on Twitter, you know, you record these podcasts in your boxers. I make sure I put on the three-piece suit, but go ahead. I'm going to let you finish that sentence.
Basketball shorts today, but... I don't ever want to get into this where we're handicapping teams just throwing games away. Like, I get that this is such a heated rivalry. But when you really start to think like the grand schemes, what's Pittsburgh playing for here? Like, the division's wrapped up basically at this point. You're on Monday night TV. You got the Patriots on deck next week. That's really the big one. Now, I know you're not throwing games away. You really want to achieve home field advantage throughout. But this feels like it's a much more important game for Baltimore.
Yeah, I mean, as far as the AFC wild card is concerned, I mean, trying to get a home game, if they, well, I mean, I don't think, then I won't be able to get a home game, but to try and secure some seating there, knowing how competitive that may be. I would agree with you. I think the game a little bit and more important for Baltimore. They're coming in on full rest. You mentioned the game against the Patriots, where the Steelers will most likely open up as a short underdog from some of the folks I've spoken to, which surprised me some. But yeah, it should be interesting. I mean, the Steelers.
Is there a look ahead out on that?
What's up?
Is there a look ahead out on that?
You know what? Let me see. I know BetOnline.ag doesn't have it, but let me pull up some of my mobile apps as we kind of go through and see if the folks at Westgate have a number up on that particular game. One thing I will say, Payne, and I wanted to ask you about it because we know teams get up in prime time. I mean, this will be the third straight primetime game for the Steelers, and I have to imagine that Patriots-Steelers gets flexed as well next week. I don't know for certain if that's the case. I mean, what kind of toll does that take on a team from a psychology standpoint?
I'm looking right now, by the way, that 2.5 at the Westgate.
2.5 at the Westgate. Okay.
Patriots opened on the look at 2.5 minus 20. So, yeah, I mean, when you're looking at these spots and you start to look at the schedule, and again, this is their hated rival, so Pittsburgh's certainly not throwing it away, but you're going to get a flex primetime game next week. It is the Patriots. That could be the bigger game here. This is so tough for me. I just, the number here is just so off. But you have to factor everything in. And so I'm going to be left on the sidelines here, I think. And you mentioned the Smith injury, which is big. And I dug into that a little bit, and he's been awesome this year. I mean, he's playing at an all-pro level. I do think Baltimore's probably a little more adept at handling that this season based on who they acquired in the offseason, right? You go get Marlon Humphrey out of Bama, I think, in the first round. We see the 16th pick. They get Brandon Carr, Tony Jefferson. So they've signed guys in the offseason, really preparing for Jimmy Smith, a guy who can never stay healthy. So I think they're a little more better equipped in that regard this season to deal with the Smith injury. I get it. At 6.5, 7 minus 20, Baltimore certainly the side there when you incorporate all the angles and the spots and the situations. It's just a matter of how much you factor for those at this point.
Yeah, 4.5, a much different handicap. We talk about it all the time. You can bet team A at one number. You can want team B at the other number. One of the most important things for some of you novice bettors out there, remember, professional bettors don't gravitate towards teams. They look at the numbers and try and look for the matchups they're able to exploit. Payne, we do have one other big game worth discussing, and that, of course, is the big game breakdown between the Saints and Falcons. But before we get there, it's time to take care of a little bit of business.
He joins us every Thursday here on the Bet the Board podcast. You can follow him on Twitter at DaveMasonBOL. He's probably got a Bitcoin boner as robust as ever this Thursday morning. Dave, you doing all right over there, my friend?
Jesus, man. Payne, you gotta take care of your partner over there.
I don't know if he's going to be my podcast partner anymore. It's a little uncomfortable. Thankfully, you're like thousands and thousands of miles away. Or
I've always wondered why I wanted to do like turn the cams on for these podcasts, but now I know.
that's a full-blown lie, complete unadulterated bullshit, but I'm glad you're perpetuating lies to all of our loyal listeners out there. So thank you both.
Anyways, no, everything's good down here. Everything's good. December, you know, both the last conference championships in college, they went to the players. They won a little bit. NFL, we actually won some this past weekend, which is refreshing. To all three primetime games came through for the house, which is very odd over the last 2 months. So the day games are tough, but the three primetime games dug us out of the hole, and we did okay for NFL. Nothing great, but good weekend. Action has been great. Usually it slows down this time of year a little bit. December's kind of a slow month, but we're happy with numbers. So we still got a lot of actives, a lot of people betting. So that's all good.
Imagine that.
That should go up this week. Right? With no college football going on, just Army, Navy, really. So for week 14, how does it look? Is action up? Any public, any professional stuff creating major liability so far?
Great. It's kind of, you know, some December's kind of a tricky month because, you know, college slows down for his first 2 or 3 weeks and, you know, people, the holidays right around the corner. So sometimes it slows down, but early indicators, we're pretty happy with it. And, but yeah, as far as the action for NFL, Saints tonight, 65% of the action is on the Saints. Packers, 82% are on the Packers. 85% are on the Jets. 78% of early bets are on the Eagles, 70% on the Cowboys, and Monday night's going to be glorious. That's it. I can't wait. 83% of the early bettors are on the Patriots. So, oh my God, we'll see if they've covered six games in a row, I think, and we get murdered just every week on them, including last week. But here we go again.
I know it's early. Any sharp action?
There actually is. Browns plus 3.5. They love the Browns every week. Ravens. it's insane, but they love the Browns and hate the Patriots usually, and I don't get it. Whatever. Ravens plus 6. That's now plus 5. Falcons tonight plus 1.5. They're now 1.5-point favorites, I believe. Falcons on the money line as well, plus 105. I believe that's now minus 118. Vikings minus 1.5. They're now 3-point favorites, I believe. And Giants plus 4.5. They're now plus 4. So that's some good sharp action there.
Interesting. And we'll definitely get you back on, obviously, to talk a lot about the college football bowl games. But any early action on that?
Yeah, I mean, we were the first to list the spreads out there for end totals earlier this week. The two big games are taking a majority action. So, you know, some of the earlier games, the lesser-known teams aren't taking a whole heck of a lot of action yet. But the two big games taking a ton of action, of course. Got some pretty split action on the Sooners game. 53% of the bets are on Oklahoma versus Georgia. Georgia actually hoping plus 3, so the early bettors got a nice bargain there. They're currently favored by 2. And then the other game, the rematch of last year's championship game, or the last two championship games, Clemson is the public side so far. 62% of the early bettors are on Clemson, plus 2.5 versus Alabama.
And Dave, you talk about action potentially slowing down this time of year. Great to hear things are still thriving and folks are keeping those hard-earned dollars in play. If folks are looking to get started at betonline.ag as we head into the final weeks of the NFL regular season, and we know the smorgasbord of bowl games that'll be made available for them, I believe 40 in total, maybe 41 if we include the national championship, how can they go about depositing with you guys, and what kind of options are available for them?
All right, head on over to betonline.ag and sign up for an account. It takes about 2 or 3 minutes. Use promo code 75BTB on your first deposit, and you'll receive a 75% welcome bonus. If you already have a betonline.ag account, but you have not taken advantage of the Bet the Board reload bonus yet, use promo code 50BTB for a one-time 50% reload bonus. All the terms and conditions can be found at promotions.betonline.ag/bettheboard.
Dave, always a pleasure getting your take. Glad to hear things rebounded a little bit last weekend in the National Football League. And, of course, Monday night, you know, we'll break down our thoughts on Patriots and Dolphins in greater detail. But good to hear we know what side the house is going to need going into it. And we'll be rooting for you as always, my friend.
All right, fellas.
What, you and Dave Payne don't like the Bitcoin boner references? It makes you feel uncomfortable early in the morning?
I don't think we're ever going to be able to record these live. It would make me feel a little uncomfortable, and certainly, Dave, without question.
I mean, somewhere along the way, as the Bet the Board brand continues to grow, we take all of our disparate locations, we bring it all under whatever it is, an S-Corp, an LLC, one umbrella, and there we are, staring into the whites of one another's eyes, recording this podcast, trying to take this product that's grown leaps and bounds over 4 years to that next level.
I see what you're doing there. It would scare me. We're starting to wonder. Our listeners are wondering. They know about your last fiasco with the lady friend. Haven't heard any new updates on that. Maybe.
I've kind of kept a lot of those things quiet.
You start talking about, you know, looking at Dave's Bitcoin boner starts to scare me a little bit. Not that there's anything wrong with that. But
I never said I looked at his Bitcoin boner. I asked him if he had a Bitcoin boner. You make it sound like I'm leering over at a man in sweatpants walking into the local bagel shop. Yeah, I think he's in a pretty good spot with his life.
Solid bagel bulge.
You know, I mean, that's not the kind of creep I am over here. I mean, although, of course, as I say that, I get an alert on my phone through one of the news sites that Senator Al Franken has resigned in the state of Minnesota. So
interesting.
You know, see how all this stuff unfolds. But all right, back to the task at hand. And of course, as we said, the big game breakdown courtesy of the American Sports Betting Coalition. The ASBC aims to educate, advocate, empower, and deliver. For more information, go to sportsbettinginamerica.com for all of your legalization updates as this situation continues to unfold. And Payne, before we got on this podcast, we had this game right around a pick'em, and we heard Dave Mason say that there was some sharp money on the Falcons. He was 100% spot on as this number continues to steam up. Oof. Atlanta now a 2.5-point favorite at betonline.ag. Total on this game, 51.5. And I think it goes without saying, this is the Atlanta Falcons' last stand.
Christ, I just am now seeing that on the screen. I didn't have that section pulled up. Yeah, it was +2 yesterday.
Yeah, you're too busy watching the fucking Bitcoin tracker instead of watching the numbers here. Like it's a goddamn cryptocurrency podcast we're doing here.
-2.5. Well, as you alluded to, it's the Falcon season. This is about it here. Where would we like to go with this? Go ahead.
I was gonna let you talk about the number first because we've seen it bounce around again, not through key numbers, and then I think after that, the logical segue and continuation is some of the injury updates for both the Saints and Falcons.
So looking at our number right now, we made Atlanta -1. So there was some value there yesterday at Atlanta +2, which certainly someone agrees with us on. Now, the injuries. Atlanta's going to get some guys back in the secondary. Brian Poole looks like he is a go. Trufant looks like he is a go. And those are obviously vital. Atlanta's secondary hasn't been great this year. Allow 46% of passes to great successful. So those two guys back are much welcomed when you're facing this New Orleans offense. That is light years above any other offense in the league. And it is not close. 9.2 yards adjusted per play on offense. That is wild to me as I'm looking at this right now.
Pretty damn good, huh?
No one else is even in the eights. Yeah. Oof. That's a good offense there. I didn't realize how good.
No, it's damn good. And it is, you know, unless you're betting against them, it's awfully fun to watch, too, when they're clicking on all cylinders. When they're getting Ingram involved, they're getting Kamara involved. They're getting the ball out to Thomas. I mean, we're seeing Willie Snead finally work off his parachute a little bit, to use Sean Payton's terminology. The rich kind of get richer in terms of what they're able to do to attack you from any and all angles.
Yeah, so along with, you know, some guys healthy for Atlanta, there's some questionable guys for New Orleans here, certainly. You know, Andres Pete, he is out for the Saints. He's an important cog to that offensive line. Armstead is going to play, but he's dealing with a thigh injury. Ingram hasn't practiced this week. I know people will read and say he practiced Monday. Monday was a walkthrough. So, yes, he did practice in walking in basketball shorts. He's dealing with a similar injury, toe injury, as Antonio Brown. Probably it's tough for a running back. He's going to try to play. He's a tough guy. Let's see if he does. Marshon Lattimore is back. Let's see how effective he is. So there's a lot of those guys that are really questionable for the Saints and whether they're 100%. That's primarily why this line's moving, along with Atlanta being in a must-win spot. It is a short week. No travel, so you have that advantage there as well. Where would we like to go from here?
Well, I want to ask you about one other injury, and I'm not sure. I mean, Coach Quinn made it sound like a bigger deal, but I trust your evaluation of what he means. Guard Andy Levitre out, making him miss his first start in 140 games, the left guard for the Falcons, worth paying attention to or something that's not really a cause for concern?
Yeah, I mean, anytime you're going to have a starting offensive lineman out, it's something to pay attention to. And that's where I think Atlanta is going to have to make some hay on the ground against New Orleans. That's going to be the key there. Save that defense just a little bit. What we have seen, though, from Atlanta is prior to last week, Sarkisian was getting a little bit better with his play calling. He was getting his offense passing in favorable situations on downs where you don't expect it. He was targeting Julio a ton on first down. Then Xavier Rhodes came into the picture last week and really shut down Julio Jones, held him to two catches. And Sarkisian didn't have an adjustment off of that, which is a little bit scary.
Yeah, it's a little bit scary when you know what this matchup's going to be. Rhodes says it all week long, and you still can't build in a contingency plan for it.
Yeah, that scares me a little bit. And it's what we've alluded to all season, just a huge downgrade in Sarkisian when you had Shanahan. Matt Ryan, though, has to be better. This has to be a game where it's put on his shoulders a little bit. He has to be more efficient. He's missed some balls. The pressure's affected him just a little bit more this season. So he's got to be better. Offensively, I think you test Lattimore right off the bat. That's the biggest thing. Let's see how healthy he is. Let's go back to that game plan that they've implemented for the last few weeks where we're passing on first down. We're getting Julio involved. And we've talked about this Saints defense improving a bunch, and it has without question, but they're still vulnerable to that explosive pass play. New Orleans 28th in explosive pass play, blah, 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 pass play defense. And that's going to be big here. They've allowed 44 total passes of 20 plus yards. So again, let's figure out what the hell Lattimore has early. And if he's no good, your game plan is going to be fine. If he looks like he's 100% healthy, then maybe we have to counter that with something.
If you're the Falcons, from a defensive standpoint, you've seen opposing running backs absolutely torch you. And you mentioned this going back to the Super Bowl. We saw Jerick McKinnon have success last week. I mean, what do you do to try and scheme to at least neutralize Kamara and his ability to create the big play, catching balls out of the backfield?
I don't know what
they can
do.
Or is there nothing they can do and you just go, all right, we're going to allow him to dink and dunk and us to death en route to this game?
When you look at Atlanta, they've been a little bit better the last 5-6 weeks stopping the ground game. They're still having issues stopping catches to running backs. And it's odd because Jones is fantastic in the middle of that defense in coverage. But whether it's scheme, whether it's the other guys not holding up their end of the bargain at linebacker, when you look, Atlanta has allowed 80 catches this season on 103 targets to running backs. And when you're facing Kamara, who might get an increased workload, I know it's a short week, but if Ingram isn't 100% healthy, you might see more of Kamara. He did have his most touches of the season, 17, in the last matchup against Atlanta. And, you know, we talk about rookie of the years, and I don't want to continue to crap on Hunt, but we talked about what it looks like for him every time he touches the ball. Right now, Kamara, 145 offensive touches this season, averaging 8.4 yards per touch. That is fantastic. So he's a nightmare matchup for this Atlanta defense. If you can somehow limit him, that'll go a long way. He is dealing with, if you've watched him run a little bit the last few weeks, he's dealing with a little nagging hamstring injury, but he's still been fantastic on a short week. Maybe that plays a role a little bit, but Atlanta's got to figure out a solution for him.
And one thing to keep in mind as well, we talked about teams owning opponents in their respective division. The way you get healthy in a hurry, New Orleans has been point spread darlings in that regard, 12-3 against the number, their last 15 against NFC South opponents. We shall see what happens, as there's a couple different schools of thought on the game tonight, but clearly a side that Dave Mason said there's very real sharp money on the Falcons, and we know they'll be rooting for Atlanta against the Saints. Before we close up shop for the NFL Week 14 podcast, Payne, we've broken down a number of games. I'm not sure if any of them really get you going from an investment standpoint, if there was another game you think warrants getting our listeners to the window as we try and get back in the win column.
See, last week we should have went East Coast. It's the better coast.
Yeah, we should have gone East Coast. That is for sure. That game would have been a proverbial rocking chair cover for us had we elected to go in that direction.
Now, you've been known to be hard headed. Some people have said the same about me.
The two people on this podcast, I'm the most stubborn.
I would say so.
Okay, yeah. Well, you can think whatever you want.
You disguise it a little better. You disguise it a little bit better.
I can mask a lot of my character flaws, which there are many, but I can do my best to at least try and mask them rather than wear my emotions on my sleeve. I try to provide that more buttoned up external appearance.
We're down in the trenches right now, trying to get the train back on the tracks. And we like Arizona again this week.
So does this make 3 weeks in a row the rubber match for the Cardinals?
We are. We're all aboard the Blaine train here. And
can we get good Blaine Gabbert for a change?
Say it again?
Can we get good Blaine Gabbert this week and not like the Blaine Gabbert we had last week?
I mean, that's the biggest thing. And I will say that again this week. If he doesn't turn it over, we are going to be fine, and they have a great chance to win this game outright. Certainly, he gave away two touchdowns early, which were tough to overcome. When he gave away 14 points, you go from taking seven to virtually laying seven, which is never positive. But when you look at this Tennessee team and where they struggle, they still haven't figured out how to cover anybody. And Tom Savage went up and down the field, regardless of what that scoreboard said last week, pretty efficiently. And so I'm not sure Tennessee's going to be able to take advantage of a guy like Blaine Gabbert. And so that's the biggest thing here. I also think you're going to be able to run the ball a little bit. And I know that was a question we got, and so many people asked it. And it's not that we're ignoring these questions, but some of them I don't know how to answer respectfully. And it was, you know, oh my God, Adrian Peterson's out. It's, you know, it's not 2012, and Adrian Peterson has zero impact to a point spread. He's having a better year than he's had the last few years, where he was averaging about 2.2 yards per carry. Williams went in there, and he was fantastic. He is certainly capable. We'll see if AP's back. If he is, hey, good, I guess, you know. But it's not anybody that's going to impact the number. So here we are, Arizona, plus three again. I don't know. The market seems to hate them. So, you know, we got three now. It did open at a couple shops at 3.5. I'm not sure if we get back there, but there's threes everywhere. I like it at three.
Hey, you've seen a little more balanced action this week. I don't think you're going to get lopsided bet splits on a game that won't attract a lot of recreational action, with Philadelphia and Rams kind of being the marquee showdown, and we'll call, you know, the prequel or slash 1B from a late afternoon attraction, the Seahawks and Jaguars. This game kind of gets relegated to the periphery along with some of the other games taking place. So it's the Arizona Cardinals for the third straight week as we look to move to 2-1 on the Birds this coming Sunday. Payne, I feel like we've done enough damage, at least for NFL Week 14. Did you have any final words of wisdom, any parting shots, any jabs you wanted to direct at me, players, you know, anybody else out there?
No. It was a good podcast. We broke down six games, went a little deeper as opposed to fanning out seven or eight and trying to come up with stuff on games that probably didn't merit us addressing. So I figured a lot of our listeners
wanted to hear the Bears and Bengals broken down in great detail alongside the Broncos and Jets.
Ooh, there you go. Maybe next time.
Best of luck again to all of our loyal Bet the Board listeners. Thanks again for your contributions both on social media, iTunes. Continue to go. Rate, give us the thumbs up, the five stars. It's greatly appreciated. Helps the podcast grow organically as we continue to try and get the gospel out to as many people who would like to take a hobby into a bit of a pastime and make it profitable. So best of luck with all your wagers should you elect to be in action tonight on the Saints and Falcons. Special thanks to Dave Mason. You can follow him on Twitter at Dave Mason BOL. You can follow Payne as always at Payne Insider. I'm Todd Furman. You can follow me there as well. And of course, the podcast at Bet the Board Pod. Good luck to our beloved Cardinals. And hopefully, ladies and gents, we'll see you at the window.